It's the Scotty Myers Show.
Hey, welcome to this week's edition of the show. I'm your host, Scotty Myers. Thank you again for joining us. Make sure you're following us on all the social media platforms that are out there. Well, I shouldn't say all of them because I don't understand TikTok. That might make me sound old, but I don't dance. I don't sing. I can lip sync, but it's not something I do for fun in my spare time. So I don't fully understand TikTok. But anyway, when it comes to Facebook and Instagram, it's at the Scotty Myers Show. And then on Twitter, just at Scotty Myers. And yeah, give us a follow there. Before we get into the news of the week, I'm kind of excited. Here in Canada, we have lifted our international travel restrictions to a point. I still have some issues with what's left. Because in Canada, if we left the country and before we came back, we had to take a very expensive PCR test, it's called. It's more than a rapid test. And they were very pricey and you had to do it like 3 days before your flight home. And it was cumbersome. So they made this big announcement and they were like, oh, we're gonna lift travel restrictions. And a lot of people are like, oh, thank God we get to travel. I mean, you're coming out of winter in Canada, like we're getting into spring, but still you're just like, man, I want to go somewhere where there's sun. I want to have some fun. And so they lifted the PCR test, but we still have to get a rapid test upon return. So they didn't totally lift all the travel restrictions. They eased them, I guess is the better way to put it. But I'm still sitting here just thinking, fuck it. I'm going. I need me some sun. I need me some Disney World. I need me some Universal. I need roller coasters in my life. So I think that is a strong possibility in my very, very near future, like a month or so is my hope. So we'll see. We'll see if I can make that happen. But I'm actively working on that right now. Because honestly, unless you like winter sports, like skiing and all that kind of stuff, which I'm not into that. I'm a bad Canadian in that respect. Canada in the winter, not that much fun. I know there's going to be some Canadians that are going to argue with me right now, but it's really, if you don't like the winter outdoor activities, not that much fun. So looking forward to maybe getting away for a little breaky poo and getting to see some of that Disney 50th anniversary, Walt Disney World 50th anniversary stuff. Now, for someone that loves the park so much, it's been killing me to not be able to go. So hopefully that happens. Let us get into the geek news of the week, shall we? Not a whole hell of a lot. Kind of a light week. But there was still some stuff. Last week's episode you on Super Bowl Sunday before the game. And we kind of talked last week about DC's Super Bowl spot and all that. So as we get into the geek news of the week this week, we're going to talk a bit about Marvel because they dropped a bombshell of a trailer during the Super Bowl and didn't put it up online early. So we'll start with Marvel and Spider-Man though. Spider-Man No Way Home continues to be a box office phenomenon. It has now jumped into the third spot for the highest grossing films for domestic box office, so North American box office. It passes Avatar to claim spot number 3. So congrats to Spider-Man. It's still Sony's highest grossing movie of all time. And I'm not saying this as like a, you know, screw you, Spider-Man, you're not going to get any higher. I just don't think Spider-Man is going to be able to catch the number 2 or number 1 movies because it's been out, you know, almost, let's see, it came out, what, December? So it's been out for a couple months now. That's when you start to see box office start to dwindle. So Spider-Man No Way Home sits at third with just under $761 million. Avengers Endgame is number 2 at $858 million for domestic box office. And the number 1 domestic box office flick is Star Wars The Force Awakens with $936 million. So, you know, you're talking Spider-Man would have to do at least another $100 million roughly, a little bit less than that, to climb into number 2. And then, you know, whatever the math is to get to number 1. So I just don't think it's possible. It just doesn't look like it. But hey, it's not like it did poorly, right? Number 3 all time. Pretty, pretty impressive. So now we'll switch over to the trailer that Marvel and Disney dropped on us during the Super Bowl, which has everyone shook. Comic book fans quaking excited, drooling on themselves. It was a Doctor Strange 2 in the Multiverse of Madness trailer. We had had that kind of look after No Way Home, which looked fantastic. This trailer, I liked it. I know, I'm going to pump everybody's brakes a little bit. I thought the trailer showed us more of what we already saw, with the exception of a few other things. And I think it's those few other things that made people lose their fucking minds. Rightfully so. But overall, like, if you just took these little nuggets out of the trailer and whatnot, then it was a good trailer, not a mind-blowing trailer. So the things that have people losing their minds, some of it's also involved with the poster. We kind of see Patrick Stewart in this trailer, and so people are like, holy shit, Professor X, holy shit, mutants, holy shit, X-Men, I'm about to lose my mind. And I'm 100% on board with them on that. This is the next thing for Marvel. If Marvel didn't have this card in their back pocket, I think they would be kind of fucked right now. If you took the Marvel Cinematic Universe and dropped it where it is right now, but Disney never bought Fox and those rights never reverted back to Disney, they would be in a massive, massive pickle right now, because Spider-Man is technically controlled movie rights-wise by another company. So if Sony wanted to be asshats, they could be like, no, you get no more Spider-Man or Spider-Man-related characters for your Avengers world over there. And then if Fox was still kicking and had the X-Men rights, it would literally be, no, you're not getting any mutants or mutant-related characters over there in your little Avengers world. If you paint that picture, where does Marvel sit right now? It's a bleak outlook. Like, you've got Iron Man's gone, Captain America's gone. Like, it's not a pleasant space to be in if those things fall that way. Thankfully for them, they didn't. So now they're sitting in that spot, not only with Spider-Man coming off the massive success of No Way Home, but now you get to bring in the mutants. Now you get to bring in the characters that people are clamoring to see again, and hopefully see them done well, because the last couple X-Men movies, meh. But, you know, this is definitely going to breathe a whole bunch of new life into the Marvel Cinematic Universe once we get to see, you know, Wolverine and Cyclops and Beast and Colossus, like all the fantastic, probably the wrong word to use, fantastic characters of the X-Men universe, and then the Fantastic Four. That's why I say it was probably the wrong word to use. That is a shot of adrenaline, Pulp Fiction style, to the heart of the Marvel Cinematic Universe at a time when it does need it. Like, I think if we were to be totally honest, and I know some Marvel fans may not want to be, it needs this kind of influx of new characters, but established characters. It's a risky, risky, risky game when you continue to go to the well of lesser known characters, because eventually, you know, to get these lesser known characters to become popular, you have to write them well. Now, you have the freedom with them, because they aren't so well known, to write them not based 100% on the, you know, the way the comic book was written, but you got to write them well. They have to be performed well, directed well. There's a lot that goes into it. You can slap Wolverine on screen and people are going to be excited. Now, if it happens to turn out great and an awesome portrayal like Hugh Jackman did, you got money in the bank for films to come. If it happens to be a meh, so-so one, then you've got a hill to overcome. But you at least have one or two kicks at the can before people are like, no, fuck you. You don't know what you're doing with that character. So having these ready-made, fan-accessible characters in their back pocket is exactly what they needed right now. And it makes total sense for them to tap into that well. So that's just one of the characters that, you know, potentially were in the trailer, in the poster. Deadpool, which would make sense with the whole mutant thing and that some people are saying they see his shoulder or something in the poster. I can't see it. Hey, to me, it's like one of those magic 3D magic photos. I'm not seeing it. But it also is like, hey, Fantastic Four, is this Fantastic Four time? Do they get introduced in the multiverse of madness? Be a perfect time for the Fantastic Four. And then do we get live action Captain Carter? Now, this doesn't necessarily, it comes a little bit from the trailer because maybe we saw the shield, but Disney Plus Italy, I think it's Italy, Disney Plus IT, their Twitter account tweeted out a picture of Captain Carter from What If and translated, the tweet reads, "It seems that S.H.I.E.L.D. has recently reappeared somewhere. Doesn't that sound like madness to you?" And then Captain Carter and all the episodes of What If are playing for you on Disney Plus. So we could see live action Captain Carter in the multiverse of madness as well. So if you're a Marvel fan, this is a just massive melting pot of a bunch of things that you've probably wanted to see. Now, hopefully they don't fuck it up. There's the potential. The Flash has this problem too. When you start to incorporate all these other characters, storylines can suffer. You know, so that is potentially a problem that could happen to Doctor Strange too. Or what if they just don't deliver? Like, what if, yeah, what if Professor X is in the movie, but it's in passing, right? It's like a cool little Easter egg that they were like, you know what, we can drop that in there and people go, oh shit, that was Professor X, but it really doesn't lead to anything. That can be a tad disappointing as well. But on the surface of the trailer and what we saw previously from No Way Home, I will say I am excited about Doctor Strange 2. It's probably the most excited I've been for a Marvel movie. The fact that Sam Raimi is directing it, I will not lie, has heightened my excitement. I think that goes to my, you know, Evil Dead fandom. But it also, when I see things like the evil Scarlet Witch that looks like it appears in there, one scene almost looks like zombie Scarlet Witch, and then also the full-on evil Doctor Strange, I know a guy with a horror background is going to treat them right. You know, he's not going to shortchange them and make them just, oh, it's evil Doctor Strange because he wears a darker colored suit. Like they did in the Superman movie years and years and years ago. So I know they're going to treat it properly and that. So I'm very excited for Doctor Strange 2 in the Multiverse of Madness coming soon. That's if all the Marvel fans don't die from their nerdgasms over the trailer. Because I think we'll get another trailer. So, you know, save some. On to Star Wars. Again, quiet in the world of Star Wars because, well, Book of Boba Fett wrapped up. And I feel vindicated. I'm just going to say this about the Book of Boba Fett. I feel very vindicated because I've been preaching to you week in, week out on this show that Book of Boba Fett was great, and that it was all leading to a giant payoff. And my review of the finale was that it did pay off. Big time. Big time. And other people seem to have the same opinion. I've seen some folks online that were kind of anti-Book of Boba Fett, saying, you know what, this show is kind of shitty, it's ruining the character. After the finale, they have done a complete 180 and are on board with the story, going, oh, if I'd only known that it was going to lead to this, then it all makes sense. And it's like, yeah, it all made sense. I had faith. I could have been let down, but I wasn't. So just a couple of little things with Star Wars. One that's ludicrous, and we'll get to that in a second. But Obi-Wan rumors, couple of them here. I don't know if these will necessarily be spoilers. There's a rumor out there that Obi-Wan and Vader are going to have a couple of lightsaber duels in this series. We shall see. Of course, there was that concept art that came out that showed Obi-Wan and Vader in a duel. So in my mind, that at least leads to one fight, but there's a rumor out there that there's a couple of battles over the course of the series. So we'll see how, if that rumor holds true, and that we might see another familiar face pop up in this series. And it would make total sense. Rumor is that Jimmy Smits will return as Bail Organa. Make total sense. He knows Obi-Wan's alive. Like, if you go back to the prequel trilogy, he knows Obi-Wan's alive. He's looking after Leia. He knows that Luke is on Tatooine. So it would make sense that he might want to pop in and check in with Obi-Wan, or that they may want to communicate and be like, listen, I got eyes on Luke. He's doing okay. How's Leia doing? It makes sense that Bail Organa would show up. So I dig that. May 25th is when we have to wait for the book, or not the book of Obi-Wan, just Obi-Wan. He didn't write a book. He just tells a story. And speaking of books, though, and this is the ludicrous Star Wars story. I know why they're doing this, okay? But this just, sometimes corporations do things, and if you write it down on paper, you go, man, that makes, you know what? I like that idea. That is a solid, solid idea. Cigars all around. I like where you're going with that. So they have released a new Star Wars book called The Princess and the Scoundrel. And as you can probably tell from the title, it focuses heavily on Leia and Han and kind of their marriage and honeymoon and courtship after the events of Return of the Jedi. And, you know, obviously, if you read the description of the book, chaos ensues because there's still remnants of the Empire out there that want some revenge and whatnot. So chaos ensues. However, the part of the book where I go, that's a tad cringy. I wish it wasn't, but that is a tad cringy, is that it basically says that the book, Han and Leia, they go on a honeymoon and they take a honeymoon voyage on the Halcyon. And if you're like, well, what the fuck is the Halcyon? Why is this cringy? The Halcyon is the name of the ship that you can stay on at Disney World. That Star Wars Galactic Cruiser 2-day immersive Star Wars vacation. Yeah, that takes place on the Halcyon. So it was like a way to bring the Halcyon into canon, I guess. And I don't know, do they have a honeymoon suite that's the Han and Leia room? Like, I've never seen that advertised. And now that I've thrown that out there, that's probably an idea they're going to steal. Fuck. I just gave them an even worse idea. But yeah, this to me is just cringy. It really is. I am an adamant supporter of Disney. I am an adamant supporter of Star Wars. And I would say 90% of what Disney has done with the Star Wars franchise, I have enjoyed and have had no issues with, Last Jedi notwithstanding. But overall, I think Disney has done a fine job giving us more Star Wars content than I ever thought I would ever get. And with the fact that so much of it has been good, I'm not mad at them. I see a lot of fans that are. I'm not mad at them. This is the type of thing, though, that I understand why fans get mad at. And I just looked at it and went, it just doesn't need to be done. It's just one of those things. Listen, you built the Star Wars Galactic Cruiser. It looks weird based on what we have seen. And since no one has done it yet, we really don't know the reviews of it yet. Maybe, you know, sometimes, you know, you go see a movie and you're like, man, that movie was awesome. The trailers did not do that justice. And maybe that's the case with this immersive Star Wars vacation thing at Disney World. But just to shoehorn it into a book and be like, oh, that's where Han and Leia had their honeymoon. Ugh. I wish you didn't. That's all I'm saying. Now, after I've said all that, I am still open to Disney World. If you need someone to go on the Galactic Cruiser and give an honest, fair review, I will volunteer. I volunteer as tribute. I know it's a different film franchise, but still, I volunteer to take that journey for my fellow Star Wars fans, if the folks at Disney would like to do that for me. I'm not above groveling. Let's move on to DC. I'm curious. As a Star Wars fan, I'm curious. Again, not a huge amount of news coming out of DC right now. We got the big Super Bowl spot that kind of laid out their theatrical films for the year. The biggest news this week was the Peacemaker finale. And I will be getting into that kind of like I did last week with Boba Fett at the very end. It will be spoiler filled. So if you haven't seen it yet, that's when you want to jump out of the episode, but I'll give you a warning. Just a couple of things before we get into the Peacemaker finale thoughts and reviews. There's a Wonder Twins movie in the works at HBO Max. Interesting characters to grab. And this is where you know, Marvel's kind of doing it with series, like, you know, for lesser known characters, like we got Moon Knight coming up, She-Hulk, that type of thing. DC seems to be going like the film route for their streaming service. And I think either or works. But Wonder Twins, if you remember old Saturday morning cartoons, they were a big part of that. So it'd be interesting to see what their movie looks like. We'll see, you know, cool news that they're developing a lesser known property like that for the streaming. But like I said earlier, you get into these lesser known properties and it's a gamble, right? I'm happy to see that they're doing it, but total gamble on Warner Brothers' part there. We've speculated for a while that we were going to get Peacemaker Season 2 based on the metrics and streaming numbers and all that kind of stuff. They have confirmed it, and James Gunn himself is going to write and direct every episode of Season 2. He directed a bunch of the Season 1 episodes, but not all of them. Apparently, he's going to be that hands-on with Season 2, and that also goes hand-in-hand with a statement he made recently about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, that when he was done with that, he was done with Guardians and done with Marvel, and that he was coming back over to Warner Brothers to work on DC, and it looks like he's going to be working on DC TV primarily. Because after Guardians 3, he's coming back. He said he hopes to be able to fully announce the details of the second Suicide Squad spinoff show soon. And then, of course, Peacemaker Season 2. All those projects are probably, you know, a couple of years at least away. But that is James Gunn's plan when it comes to work after he wraps up Guardians 3. So, cool news there. The Batman, not that far away. Some early reviews online from some people that got to see it, and they say it's fantastic. So the early buzz is good. It does look great. I already have my tickets. I even bought one of the, I'm sure you may have seen the product tie-ins, the Little Caesars Batman Calzone pizza. Yeah, I have one of those. You put the I'm trying to find the Batman Oreos here. I haven't found them yet. You put Batman on something and I'm buying it. I'm that sucker. I really am. So, but the calzone pizza, $10, it was a deal. Like, my wife and I, it was enough for us. We ate it. It was actually, I found it kind of tasty. I'm not going to lie. Maybe it was the bat symbol element of it, but I dug it. Good little snack if you're having like a movie night. Just say that. All right, going to get into the Peacemaker season finale here. So if you have not watched it yet, this is where you hit pause, you jump out of this week's episode, and then after you're caught up on the Peacemaker, you jump back in and see if my thoughts on the finale and kind of on the season overall line up with what you thought. So we're jumping into the spoilers of the Peacemaker season finale in 3, 2, 1. Okay, if you've listened to the podcast, you know that I have been unabashedly blown away by this series. I've loved it more than I thought I would. And I remember my initial gut reaction when they announced it was, fucking Peacemaker. All right, I guess. We'll see what happens. You know, I was excited for DC content. My expectation and what they've done with this series could not be further apart. Like, they've blown my expectations out of the water. And I'll break down some of those in a bit, but the finale was this culmination of the madness that has been this season with the butterflies and the cow, which was a giant blob, but yet somehow cute. It's the same with the butterflies. James Gunn has a brilliance of taking the thing that is evil and making it cute so that you somewhat sympathize with it. He did it in Suicide Squad brilliantly with Starro. Like, Starro in the Suicide Squad was obviously a world conqueror. I mean, it was Starro the Conqueror, that's his name. And yet, when he was, you know, finally set free and he gets his revenge on the Thinker, you're like, you go, Starro. That's the villain, but you have a moment of cheering for the villain. And then when he was dying and had that line of like, I was just happy floating looking at the stars, it was like, oh my God, you're killing me. Like, that was the villain. We're supposed to be happy he's dead, and now you've made me sad that this thing is dead. And they kind of did the same thing in Suicide Squad with the butterflies and even the cow, which didn't have any lines, but you could tell when it was dying, it had the sad look on its face. It was gut-wrenching. And that is it's something only James Gunn seems to be able to do right now. It's a Gunn specialty, And I kind of wish he didn't have it. The other things about, there were so many nice little callbacks in the finale that were payoffs from things that were dropped throughout the season. One small one was Peacemaker picking up his gun and they etched the bird of peace on it for him. Like that called back to earlier in the season when he had an issue with it, which, you know, just a great little touch. And it was a half a second of film of Peacemaker holding the gun and just rubbing his thumb over the Dove of Peace. And you're like, oh, fuck, that's cool. Like, that's just brilliant film television making, I guess, whatever you want to call it. But just a great moment. And then the whole thing, Peacemaker being a douche and calling Economos Diebeard. And then he had to explain why he dyed his beard like that as he was trying to be undercover in one point. And he shared his truth, and it was painful and sad. And then that hit Peacemaker. There's a great cut back to Peacemaker where he's like, man, I was an ass. I was a total ass. And that's not cool. You know, and again, these little payoffs in the finale were bigger to me almost than the finale of the show. Like we kind of knew, like when you're on a superhero show, you kind of know that the superheroes are going to win in the end, right? It's very rare that a show or movie has the balls to not have them win in the end, the good guys. So the whole time it was kind of like, oh, I know what's going to happen here. You know, they're going to kill the cow. There's going to be some hilarity and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to enjoy the hell out of it. But there were so many great little moments in this finale that paid off from little stuff dropped earlier that it was just brilliant. It really was. Some heart-wrenching scenes that when you get towards the end of the episode, like as they're trying to defeat the cow, Harkor gets shot. She's in the hospital. Peacemaker, he stayed there with her. And when she says, I heard you stayed here for hours, he's like, yeah, a little tear comes out of her eye. First emotion she's shown in the entire series, with the exception of like odd little moments when she was by herself at the bar. But like first real emotion from Harcourt in the entire series. And it meant something at that point. I can't stress enough the emotional toll of this finale for what was essentially them killing a giant cow. It is really bizarro. Everybody has a kind of a moment, much like I mentioned about the Book of Boba Fett finale, where they skillfully wrote it so that every character had a moment. The same thing happens here. Vigilante has moments where he's just hacking and slicing people. Peacemaker obviously has moments. Harcourt has a moment. Economos has a moment. Adebayo has multiple moments. She goes full on badass to rescue Harcourt at one point, which was just a really cool scene to see. And then she goes to help Peacemaker, and then some hilarity ensues. She puts on one of his helmets, which has been deemed human torpedo. And basically, if you say activate human torpedo, it just flings you forward like a human torpedo. And they do that a couple times to really good comedic yet useful effect, you know, like using the power of the helmet in a positive way. And then she has a moment at the end of the episode that I don't know exactly where it leaves the future of the Suicide Squad in the DCEU. Now, my guess is this could open it to something else. And I'll get to that in a second. But she has almost the Iron Man moment, right? Where it's like, hey, I'm Iron Man at the end of Iron Man 1. She has a press conference where she's clearing Peacekeeper's name and she just spills the beans on, hey, there's a thing that's run out of Bell Reef Prison. It's called Task Force X. They take convicted criminals to do these shady jobs for the U.S. government. And, you know, if they're successful, they get time knocked off their sentence. And the capper on it all was she goes, and it's run by my mother, Amanda Waller. And they cut to, you know, Viola Davis, who is just so great as Amanda Waller. And she's just like, what the fuck? Like, pissed. And I look at Amanda Waller as one that would eat her own young, right? That's that character to me. So I'm like, did she just sign her own death warrant by her mother? Because Amanda Waller is that tiger, you know, that's just like, I'm going to do what I need to do to survive. And I'm going to do what I need to do for the country. So I'll be curious to see. That has to play into season two. It really has to. And when I said it could lead to other things, although not technically started by Amanda Waller, if you wanted to venture it off and turn it into the Secret Six, as opposed to Task Force X or the Suicide Squad, that could happen. I could see that writing going, right? Going that way. So that's a possibility. Like season two, and I would not be mad at this, if it was Peacemaker and his team with Vigilante and Hardcore and Adebayo and Economist against the Secret Six. I wouldn't have an issue with that at all. Like that to me would be, that could actually be some really good television depending on which version of the Secret Six you go with. So that, I mean, that to me would be a great, great season two. Don't know that they'll go that way, but it definitely has opened the door to a realm of unknown for the Suicide Squad. I'm hoping this isn't the end of the Suicide Squad in the DCEU. I'm too big a fan of the group. So we'll have to wait and see where it goes from here. Now, the thing that got all the attention online and was spoiled to me, I was trying to avoid it for the day. And you know who spoiled it? Snyder fans. People in the cult of Snyder. And I don't want to turn this into another rant on the cult of Zack Snyder fans. And I always have to preface it because I don't want them to get too mad at me and saying, I like the guy. I love Zack Snyder's Justice League. I love Man of Steel. I love Batman v Superman. I also like other work people are doing. I think it's okay to like multiple directors and multiple visions. So when they get to earlier on in the episode, when they show up at the farm where the cow is, and it's an army of butterfly infected humans and, you know, Peacemaker, Vigilante, this small team, Adebayo calls Amanda Waller and says, can you send backup? And basically it's like, no. And it's, you know, Peacemaker's like, call the fucking Justice League. Which right away I was like, that's kind of a funny reference, right? Now, had I not known that it was spoiled, I would have been like, that's funny. Knowing that what was coming, it kind of ruined it for me. But basically, after the chaos ensues, the Justice League shows up. Well, four members of the Justice League show up. You got Superman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, and Aquaman. They all show up. And Superman and Wonder Woman are in shadow. We do see a little back and forth between Aquaman and The Flash as Peacemaker's walking by. And it's just a great, like, he's like, you're fucking late. And then as he walks by Aquaman, he's like, and stop fucking fish. Or go fuck another fish. I forget exactly the line. And, you know, Aquaman like, oh, Jason Momoa. As Aquaman is like, man, I'm so tired of that rumor. And then it cuts to Flash going, I don't think it's a rumor, man. And then just, fuck you, Barry. It's a great little back and forth. Fits the tone of the show. And that's it. That, you know, but it was a great, it brought that Justice League into this world. So we know now that all that this world is growing and connected. And what I liked about that was it was kind of the opposite of what DC said they were going to do. DC said, you know what? We're going to focus on solo, non-interconnected stories. That was what they said. And then when you see things like Joker and the Batman, it felt like that was the direction that they were going. But by tying Justice League into Peacemaker, you have now connected a lot of dots. And you have a pretty fully formed universe, really. And especially the one that might look a little different after the events of Flash. But it has, at least for now, brought that that world into this one. So, yeah, really great surprise at the end. Now, some people online complaining about the Justice League cameo, a few things that they were complaining about. And I want to address each complaint. I'm addressing it like I did it. But number one, they were like, well, why did we only really see, you know, Aquaman and Flash? We didn't see Wonder Woman except in shadow, and we didn't see Superman except in shadow. I think I have the answer to that. One is availability. You know, Momoa was probably kicking around and available, as was Ezra Miller. Initially, I'd read a thing recently where James Gunn said he only had Momoa. He had talked to him about it, and he was like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And then word got to Ezra Miller, and Ezra was like, I want to be part of it too. And so it kind of came together a bit organically. Of course, Gal Gadot just had a baby, especially when they would have been shooting this. She definitely would have been either just about to go into labor or just after labor and you know, caring for a newborn. So that's probably why she didn't show up as Wonder Woman. So hold that against her if you want. I think it's petty if you do. And, you know, if we're going to be totally honest about why wasn't Henry Cavill there as Superman, we don't know what his future is as Superman. I'm sure James Gunn probably would have loved to have had them, but we don't know what's happening there. And if Henry Cavill, and this isn't a slight on Peacemaker, if Henry Cavill is coming back as Superman, you don't want that return to be a 2-minute cameo in at the very end of Peacemaker. Like, his return has to be bigger than that, right? So, you know, if that's your issue, come the fuck on. Come on. And then the other thing was people were like, well, where's Batman? Where's Cyborg? Okay. Obviously, you've never read a Justice League comic if that's your take. Because you could also ask, where's Martian Manhunter? Where's Green Lantern? You know, and Martian Manhunter. If you're, and a lot of these complaints were coming from people that would rather have the Snyder Cut be kind of the canon for the DCEU, which I would agree with. I would much rather it be elements of it anyway. But, you know, where was the other members of the Justice League? If you ever read a Justice League comic, the Justice League's not a band, right? It's not like, you know, the Beatles couldn't go on stage and go, hey, here's Ringo and Paul. Sorry, you know, John and George aren't here tonight. That's not, like, the Beatles can't do that. But the Justice League just sends people to the problems, right? Because the Justice League, when you get, especially when you get into the comics, has so many members that they just send out teams. It's like, okay, who's available? Who can go handle that right now? Oh, you guys can go. Or, oh shit, it's an underwater mission? Well, we definitely can't send someone that can't breathe underwater. Quickly, send Aquaman to that one. So it's either case-specific or availability-specific. And they have written it like that in the comics at times. So if you can't wrap your head around that, I really don't know what to say. Because that's just the basis of it. It's... no team always shows up all together. The Suicide Squad would break off into sub-teams, or sometimes they would only send three of them, or whatever. It's just how it is. Like I said, they're not a band. They're not a sports team. They don't have positions to fill. Like, it's like, you know, it's not like, well, shit, the whole team showed up except the quarterback. Well, now we're fucked. It's not how the Justice League works, or Suicide Squad, or Avengers, or any of those groups. So if that is one of your complaints, pick up a goddamn comic. Stop nitpicking. And then there's other ones that I have seen out there that they're saying, oh, Cyborg wasn't there because James Gunn is a racist. Despite the fact that one of his main characters in this show was an African-American lesbian. And then, you know, and then also Amanda Waller is in there. She's also a person of color. And that, so that argument holds no water. That's the grasps of the desperate that just want to shit on the show and shit on James Gunn for the sake of shitting on the show and shitting on James Gunn. Lame. If you don't like it, that's fine. Like, it's one of the things in fandom that I've no, like, it apparently isn't okay not to like things. You also have to rip it down and tear it apart. You don't have to. Because you know what? Not everything is made for you. Just like everything is not made for me. DC's probably going to release a project that I'm going to be like, meh, that wasn't for me. Like League of Super Pets. I'll use that as an example. Odds are that movie is not for me. I'll probably watch it. I will watch it. But it's probably not for me. Lego Batman was not for me. I enjoyed it a bit, but some of the stuff I also was like, oh, God. But it wasn't made for, it's just not for me. And you know what? It's okay. Not everything has to be for you. Just remember that. If you're a fan and somebody works hard and makes something with a character that you like, and it turns out that you like the project that they made, that's bonus. If they make a movie or a TV show and you don't like it, that's okay. Same as if you're reading a comic book. There's been Batman comic book arcs that I've been like, man, that wasn't that good. I didn't like that. I didn't like the way that writer characterized Batman in that. But that's okay. It's okay. We don't have to shit on everything. Okay. I need to get down off my soapbox. It just bugs me when I see the fandom turning on each other. Because I remember when I first got into comic books, it was a community that made me feel welcome. And especially as a guy that was a bit geeky and nerdy and didn't necessarily fit in everywhere that I went, the comic book shop and the fun-hearted conversations of, oh, who would win in a fight? Or if you were going to cast this movie, who would you cast? Those are fun conversations, and it was just fandom having fun with fandom. And now it's so toxic at times. All elements of fandom can be very toxic at times, and I just wish we could get back to the, let's just have fun. And love that we're fans. And things that, you know what? I'm not the biggest Doctor Who guy on the planet. I have no opinion of Doctor Who. I tried to watch it. Didn't really grab me. I'm not going to say it's shitty. I'm not going to shit on somebody for liking it. That's their thing. And that's awesome that they have a thing. I have some things too. They're probably different. And that's okay. It's my message for the week. I feel like I need uplifting after school special music after the end of that. That wasn't planned. I'll tell you, honestly, I sometimes don't plan where I'm going with these things. I just kind of sit down and talk. That wasn't planned. So sorry for the soapbox meeting. Thank you though for tuning in. Hopefully you dug your thing, and hopefully, you know, like Peacemaker, hopefully you dug it. It brought me a lot of joy. If not, there's more stuff coming down the pipe. So I'm sure there's something that you're going to dig. So until we chat again, don't forget, follow me on the social media channels at Scotty Mars on Twitter, The Scotty Mars Show, Facebook, and Instagram. And yeah, until we chat again, have a great week.